Welcome to episode 42 of the Hellbound podcast, hosted by myself, Alex Blackburn, and Michael Chan. This week we have something special. We have an interview with filmmaker Ricardo Soriano, whose film Long Pig has been submitted to the Hellbound Horror Festival. The interview was originally recorded during the first Hellbound Horror Festival. Michael and I will be back next week with a new episode of the podcast, so in the meantime, please enjoy this interview with Ricardo Soriano. So Ricardo, how are you doing? Welcome to the Hellbound interviews.
Thank you, man. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
It was really nice to receive your film, and I know it's outside of the competition and all of that, but I thought it was fantastic. And you think I'll get you to kind of tell us a little bit the plot overall, but you do initially think it's going to be about the girls in the car, which I love,
right?
And then it's like the little caravan and. Caravanning and being outdoors and touring is very popular in the UK.
So it was
really good, and it's really twisted in all the positive kind of ways. You know, I absolutely love that kind of thing. So if you could tell me just a little bit about the plot and a little bit about yourself and how it all started.
Yeah, where do you want me to start? By myself?
If you want to tell us about yourself and how you got into filmmaking, and then we'll talk about before that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in Rome, where I am right now. So basically, I lived my life between Italy and the U.S. I was born in Rome, so I lived all my youth here. And then I moved to the United States, and I never came back after, like, I stayed for 15 years over there. I became an American citizen, and I always wanted to work in film. I mean, I was born in next door to a neighborhood here in Rome with Cinecittà, where Fellini and Spaghetti Western and everything just happened when I was born. So I kind of like, I really wanted to get inside those walls and work with these people. But obviously I was a kid.
It's pure inspiration, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because Italian filmmakers, obviously US, but Italian especially, with, for me, Leone is
an absolute genius.
And he's kind of influenced generations of filmmakers, even if they don't realize it. So when you were, before you kind of really got into filmmaking, what were your very early, was Fellini an early influence, or who were you? Was it a family member that introduced you to film? How did it kind of really get started?
I remember when my dad came home with the VHS trilogy of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And that's when it all began. My dad he never worked in the film industry. He was actually a physical therapist. But he got me to watch so many movies. Every night, like, sit here next to me, let's watch this film. So I got so into film. I mean, just by being next to my dad every night. And then I kind of, you know, obviously you're young, you're 15, 16. I wanted to do anything. Like, I was a musician. I used to play with five different bands and travel and all that. And then I became a photographer first. So I got my first camera. And obviously before starting doing video, I'm like, okay, I want to become a photographer. I want to learn what it means to frame, what's photography. So then I moved to the United States and I started working as a photographer. I was a commercial photographer for many years. And then I ran into this person that's kind of like my, my mentor.
Your Yoda.
Yeah, it's kind of like my Yoda, my mentor. And it turned out he's Italian and he's from this little town where my grandpa was born. So it's super cool, like meeting in LA, this guy.
That's awesome, born. Yeah.
So he's a documentarist. So I started working with him as an assistant, but start working as a documentarist. So I will learn how to just handle, it's you, your camera in the middle of the desert, and you gotta bring home the story. You know, you don't have 30 people around you, 50 people holding things for you, and everybody's just ready when you want to. No, I learned that it's you, your camera, and miles of road that you gotta bring home work, you know, the job. So I'm really thankful to that, because, I mean, nothing against people that come out of film school, because I think they're really, really important. But I feel that you need to experience that. You need to experience what is the worst case scenario for you to bring home something where you're alone. You don't have control of lighting. You don't have control over anything. It's just you and your camera. and the person you have to interview or the animal or whatever story you have to bring home. So I'm really thankful I got to learn in the hardest condition, in the most difficult condition. So then once I started working more into, I became like a DP, a DOP, and it got easier and easier until then I realized I just want control of everything. I need to be a director. I want to control it. Because yes, I love, I mean, photography is my main thing. I love the photography. I mean, I spend more time in the photography than with the actor, which is wrong. But I hate it when you have a vision and then, I don't know. I'm a little bit of a freak in that sense. I need to have control over it.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's got to do with, you've got to have, you're having exacting standards. You've got standards you really want to keep high, and the only way to keep control of that or to get it to a level where you want it to be consistent is by being in control of everything.
Absolutely, which is bad. I mean, in a way, you need to... I mean, I'm able to work with different directors all the time, no problem. But sometimes I just feel like, I want to tell this story. I want to tell it the way I see it. I don't want to just to light it and make it look pretty, you know, for someone else. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I love dealing with actors. I mean, it's something that I got really... into it, and then you find some actors you don't have to tell them anything. I mean,
yeah,
in this short, going into this long big short that I did, I found these amazing actors and they did it all. I mean, all I had to do is to tell them the feeling I wanted, how I wanted, when I wanted, and they just did it. It's fantastic. It was fantastic.
You know how some films or documentary shows make you hungry when you watch, like I can't remember what it's called. There's a fine dining series on Netflix.
Okay.
And it starts in... Chef's Table, yeah. Chef's Table.
Yeah.
Brilliantly shot. And it makes me really hungry. But when I watched your film, Long Pig, it did the opposite. It really did. And if you can, at the very core, if you can do something like that, if you can make people emote, whether it's... emotionally or physically or psychologically, you're onto a winner, I think. And that's what something before we kind of hit upon the making of the film. Was horror always a passion of yours, or was it something new to you?
Huge passion of mine. My main thing would be a sci-fi, horror sci-fi kind of thing. I'm a crazy sci-fi fan. Obviously, when you're talking about budget, sci-fi has become really expensive and horrors are the cheapest to shoot. So between the two, I have a lot of stories, obviously, that I wrote, but I had to choose what was the easiest for my budget. And since it was self-funded, in order to then start and progress with something better in the future. But if I would have, it's a challenge. It's a challenge, I mean, to say, okay, I only have this budget. What can I do with this budget? Horror was the easiest thing. I mean, if you think about it, it's not really even horror. I mean, it's just disturbing.
Yeah, there's lots you can say about the film.
I see it as a disturbing thing. I mean, it's horror-based, obviously. But when people will look at the film, they'll understand also my documentaristic style, because I handled the camera myself, and I wanted to... I filmed it all as if it was a documentary. I really wanted all handheld. I wanted to be right in.
But it's not just handheld like a Paul Greengrass approach. It's still very aesthetically pleasing, because a lot of handheld can be forced.
Right,
a lot of movement without real purpose or motivation. But I think it worked out really well. And what you did. I love the minimal setting of the caravan as well on the country. Was it a country road, isn't it? On like
it's the outskirts here of Rome. The caravan itself, it's a 3D built caravan, and then the inside is an inside of a camper. But I had, his name is Terence Briscoe. He's an amazing set designer, and he was like, I walked in with him the day before. He looks at it and he's like, okay, we're going to throw some blankets here. We're going to put some puppies here. We're going to do this. We need a calendar. We need a little candle. And I was like, all right. The next day he showed up, set it all up, and it was exactly how I wanted it. It was fantastic.
And then,
a shout out to my DOP, Piero Perilli, that he lit it in a way that, oh, yeah, I'm dropping stuff. But he lit it in a way that really brings out the minimal country, old school. I want it to look almost like 90s, you know?
Just
give it that feeling. I mean, that's what I grew up with, 90s horror films, you know? It's that's what I wanted to bring back. I wanted to bring back that feel.
Yeah, like I know he did last summer or something like that.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's... the great thing is I didn't know what to expect. And that's really nice not to know any kind of, see any production stills, anything like that. And I watched that, I watched it straight away when you sent me the link. And then I watched it again on the in the same evening with my fiance when she came home. And she loved it as well because we like drama. We like reality-based TV like RuPaul's Drag Race. But then we like the other end of the spectrum as well. We really like darkness and twisted stories.
Yeah.
So it really appealed to me. And that's one of the reasons I started the festival was because
awesome.
So I could speak to filmmakers like yourself, Ricardo, and talk about the, you know, choices and horror generally. But I really enjoyed it. The most disturbing thing for me, without giving the plot away, would be the negligence of the old man being like left to his own devices, just watching TV. And
yeah, there's a long backstory in my head between the two. I mean, he was never good to her and she's not good to him. And in what she's doing, she also kind of makes him an accomplice in a certain way without his consent, but he has no saying in it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so she really makes him an accomplice. That that's his punishment for what he's done in the past to her.
Yeah, yeah. that's I like that. That's really good, man, yeah.
Then
so,
how
did you, when did you first come up with this idea? And could you tell us a very small plot summary, a really small one for the viewers?
Well, I came up with this idea probably 2 years ago. As a creative, I mean, I come up with so many different ideas, so many different things. Sometimes I dream of them and I wake up and I just start writing them down. And then, I mean, not writing anymore, now it's writing. But then I would wake up and I read them, like, what does it mean? What did I write? You know, sometimes I forget, sometimes they come back. And honestly, I don't know how this idea came and when it came. I remember it was 2 years ago because I spoke to some people about it. And I was like, I want to make this. I want to do that. That would be so cool. I want to find the right caravan. And this idea just started growing and growing and growing until I had the time. And fortunately, I had a little bit of a budget to make it happen. And without giving it away, I mean, I want everybody, unfortunately, to need their guards up. You never know. You never know what your neighbor is up to. You never know what's going on. You can pinpoint a random geographical point in the map, and you have a door somehow in front of you. You don't know what's going on behind that door.
Absolutely.
Always keep your guard up. Never keep your guard down. Yeah, you might be with your friends, your girlfriend's in the car having fun. You know what? Keep your guards up because you might be next. You don't know what's going on. So to me, it's not this film. It's not about them. It's not about that story. But that's just something that was happening in the same, in that time and space. I see it like that. I see things happening all the time. And sometimes my stories are not about, I mean, the person, the characters in my stories are not the heroes, are not the villains. They're just people that are doing what they do. And it's almost like I pick up a random spot and I want to see what are they doing right there. You know what?
That sounds like the solicitor's, the lawyer's excuse for this couple.
It's just, they do what they're doing.
Yeah, oh, yeah, they're just doing that. Just having some dinner.
In some cases, without giving it away, the TV could be the protagonist telling a story. They're not telling the story. The TV is telling us a story, perhaps.
I think I was really, that was something in the writing I really loved. Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Perhaps in that same time, the same stories are going to be played in a different place. Who knows what was happening?
Yeah, that's what I loved about the way you went about your storytelling, the way you're telling the narrative. It was a really good device. I really, really enjoyed that. And more power to you for that.
It's at an important moment where I've had people telling me there's a scene where it's way too long. And obviously I know there's a particular scene that it's way too long, and I did it on purpose because I want two things coming out of that scene. I want you to really feel it. I want you to live it. And I want you to say, come on, okay, that's it. I want to see next. But I want to make you uncomfortable because I'm not switching yet. Yeah. I want you to be like, why isn't he switching? And that's my goal. I want you to be, okay, this is throwing me off. I want to see next. Okay, I saw that. I don't care. I'm going to show it more. And then there's a contrast there with what was going on TV. I mean, it's an Italian movie that the one on TV showing. I didn't want to subtitle the whole movie.
I don't think you needed to, no.
It's a movie in the 40s that won an Oscar. But the main thing is what was happening, the sounds that were coming out of the TV, they were kind of like going the opposite way with what we're seeing. We're seeing somebody that has, let's say, no regrets, and then we're hearing regrets. So kind of like the sound and the images are going to go against each other.
Yeah.
So I wanted to push that to the limit. I wanted to keep showing you that because I want you to feel that. I want you to feel that difference between regrets and no regrets.
Absolutely.
I don't want to give it away, but yeah.
When did you, exactly, because it's really difficult to talk about without giving it away. And I think the setup, which I kind of mentioned earlier with the girls in the car, I think that was a really nice, that was a very, and now you're talking about 90s, it's very 90s scene. And I love that. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I feel like it's storytelling. I mean, a lot of people, what I don't like is I see a lot of, I don't know, Netflix films or things where, yes, the beautiful picture, they're you know, great acting or whatever, but I feel like it's lacking storytelling. We're so worried about making something look good that we're not worrying so much about how we're telling that story.
There's and a lot of content. Like it's very one note, isn't it? A lot of those TV movies, I'd call them.
Exactly.
Because when you watch a TV movie from the 90s or 2000s, it's very one note. But this looks like an expensive one note. And
right.
You know, you get the odd film like I can't remember, Extraction. I think it was Extraction. Exactly. Chris Hemsworth, you get really nice. I think it was really brilliantly crafted. And it felt like more of a movie, but a lot of them, it's really kind of rubbish, you know.
They need to hurry. So they need to hurry. They need to find their way to make it quick. So they don't. I remember when it used to take 5-6 years to put down the final draft of a film. Now in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you can put it down and film it within 2 months.
Exactly. That's the
problem. It's kind of killing the storytelling. It's kind of killing that part. I could have just started, everybody would have started my film inside the caravan. Or, you know, you're already inside. Or maybe just the outside. Why would you add another? It's for the storytelling. There is
absolutely
other things that allow the storytelling to be told. And you appreciated that beginning scene. So there you go. I mean, that, there are little details that they really, really just emphasize the story in a manner that you would miss if you would have done it differently.
Exactly, yeah. And it's something you enjoyed making. I can absolutely tell. You know, it's you've got to enjoy the process, I think. As long as you know what your end goal is going to be and you can achieve that and you've got like-minded people around you to help you kind of find that vision, it's then you can enjoy it along the way. How long did it take to put a long pick together? How long
was
the
quick
process from day one, kind of the original idea, to the kind of final cut?
Well, I think the most important part and the one it takes the longest will be the pre-production. I think pre-production should be 80% of the work because the way I explain it is if you're into production or let's say you're in the post-production process and you don't have a pre-production done right, it's kind of like putting together a puzzle without having the picture in front of you.
Yeah.
So the picture in front of you, it's going to be your pre-production. It's going to tell you where that color is going to go, what that little shape is going to look like, where it goes.
Okay? Absolutely.
If you don't have that pre-production, you might be able to end up putting together the horse or whatever it is, but it's going to take you a lot longer than would have, you know, if you had the pre-production done. So I think what took the most was the pre-production, you know, obviously casting, funding, finding the right location, understanding budgeting, shot list, crew. Just that probably took 3 months, something like that.
Yeah.
That probably took 3 months to just do an 8-minute video. But the shooting was really quick, 2 days. One night we did everything with the two actors, and one day I did the camera cars with the, you know, for the beginning scene.
Mm-hmm.
But that was super quick because we had the pre-production done right.
Exactly. I mean, if you plan out, you can almost do anything. Like the freelance job I did on Sunday morning, it's for a local business, and it was this whole. It was for a gym that's getting more and more popular, and they wanted a story to it. And I said, okay, I got this. And then I storyboarded it, and it was all about this guy getting up in early in the morning, showing real dedication, going for a run. There's a castle not too far away, so we shot some sunrise there. And I storyboarded everything. I planned everything out, and then it was just so efficient. And obviously, because you and I have been doing this kind of thing for a while, when you have that planned and you nail that, it's great. And if you can show those actors your plan, it gets everyone on the same page, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's so important. And
yeah, it's the most important part. I mean, the production itself, once everybody knows where they need to be and at what time and what they're building for the next scene and whatever they're setting up, you know that your camera department knows to switch the lens after that particular shot. I mean, you don't have to waste time and go like, hey, let's put a 35. Hey, can you get the actor ready? Hey, can you move the lighting? No, everybody knows exactly. So you're going to spend time onto the whole preparation where, the days before you're having meetings after meetings that your AD, your first AD is the most important person on the set that
yeah.
day. Not the director, but the first AD.
And
Miranda Angeli was my first AD, also my producer. She helped me produce the whole thing. And she was fantastic because she knew where everybody needed to be at what time and doing what. So she would, organize the whole thing. And so we shot, seriously, it was 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. and we're done.
That's great.
And, I mean, I even had an 83-year-old man. I felt bad. It was cold. We need to go home. We need to send him home. So we did some things with him real quick so he could leave.
Right. That's amazing.
And then the post-production took 3 weeks working constantly all day, every day. And that was also problems with, we did the TV and the caravan outside. It's all done in 3D and then After Effects, and it takes forever to render. So we had also computer problems and all of that.
Yeah.
So sometimes we wait 7 hours.
It's the worst. It's rendering and all of that is the work for when you're really beginning, when you first get your camera or whatever it is to mid-level to a reasonable level, it's always a pain in the ass. Rendering.
Yes.
The possibility of failure, drop frame. It used to be drop frames with Final Cut Pro 6 back in the day in 2005 and 6. There's just a nightmare of things. And there were certain modes, as I remember in Final Cut, I don't use Final Cut anymore, but where you had to change one of the settings in Final Cut to export it out because it was expecting a higher end video. And that's why there were drop frames. It was just a ridiculous process.
What you can do is, I mean, usually with Final Cut, I used to do the proxies.
So yeah, exactly, yeah.
And then send it and switch it to send it on too high. Yeah, it was annoying.
Exactly, but, yeah.
I mean,
and now we're...
With the title and the what's it called, the caravan, I mean, seriously, it would take 10 hours just to see, because it's on After Effects, which is so slow, and it would take 10 hours to see if it worked, and you're like, no, we have to do this. So it took 3 weeks every day, 24 hours. Because another important thing is to set yourself that day is the deadline. Because otherwise, you're never gonna be. I mean, right now, I would change some things. I would fix some more things. I would still be working on the same film.
Yeah.
No, you say, okay, that day needs to come out. That's it. Because otherwise, I know people that are working on the same thing for 3 years.
There's a legacy project. A friend of mine, I won't name names, but a friend of mine, he's been working on this music video for a British band that are quite popular. I've seen the footage. I've seen the edit. And he's been working on it for just over 3 years. And obviously the band aren't happy and all that, but what he's produced is amazing. But he doesn't give himself, he probably will watch this, but he doesn't give himself those milestones, those deadlines. And
if he's watching this, I mean, if he's going to watch this, put yourself a deadline, do it. Otherwise, you're never going
to. He's never going to work. You know, you're never going to work with that group or through the agency or through the label again. But I've seen the footage. It looks amazing. But he's
job. You know, that's
exactly. And you know, wallowing on a job is the worst. You've got to finish it. That's it. You've really got to. Because you can get really precious if you've got, like, I've got an idea for a Christmas horror film, and I was going to produce it this year, but I just don't have the time because of the festival. I started two film festivals online, and the next one starts again in April, and then it's like cyclical now. So I need to go into prep pretty much in January, and there's practical and there's visual effects, just a few shots, and two child actors that I need, and I've got a family. Their two kids are actors and they're at the age now. And I don't want to start it unless I know I can finish it in a really polished way. And I just want to, I can see it in my head. I can see the idea in my head and how it's going to be executed. And I really have to plan that out and storyboard it really well because of the child actors, they need to know exactly how it's going to work. But I wouldn't want to start something without finishing it. I just can't stand to do it.
Well, you just have to give up sleeping. That's what you have to do.
Yeah. I haven't slept. We've all gone through stresses since March. Some more so than others, and things are going, pardon the phrase, tits up for a lot of people. But that's why I started the Hellbound Horror Festival, was to give a lot of people focus. And I've spoken to some of our judges have been amazing. Like what I'm doing now, where I interview Ricardo, is speaking to independent filmmakers and then speaking to someone that's been in the industry for 20, 30 years. So our last interview was the guy from, he played the Chatterer in Hellraiser 1 and 2.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
And then before that, it was a couple of very independent filmmakers that had their film on Amazon. And then before that, it was, I think it was Jeffrey, Jeffrey Reddick, who created Final Destination. So we're kind of doing it that way, and curating a lot of independent filmmakers' interviews as well. And it's really good fun to see where people are at, what they're working on.
I'm not gonna hide it right now. It's tough for me, it's tough for everybody. I mean, I had the time to do this one, but I gotta work. So I'm teaching. Absolutely. I'm also a professor. I teach cinematography, and I teach filmmaking.
So from a real filmmaker's point of view, what's it like to teach younger filmmakers?
I really like it. I mean, honestly, I didn't think I would, but I really do, because you can see them. They want to know. They want to know what you know. And I never went to film school. I learned on my own, and I love to share everything I know. And sometimes they know more than me in certain aspects. I mean, because they read it in books, and I love it, because it's always a back and forth, I think.
Yeah, the winner of the Hellbound Horror Festival, and his film was picked for best film by Alex Proyas, who directed The Crow and Dark City. He's a teacher as well, and he does a very similar thing to yourself, and he gets a lot of satisfaction. And the lead actor in his film, who's a vampire in the film, it's a really really original take on vampirism. He's a fellow teacher at the school, so it really is satisfying. Even if you teach someone something new, it's an incredible feeling and satisfaction, especially if they're dedicated
really,
as well.
It really is. And then I love to bring them on my sets, or, you know, just, it's cool. I really think it's cool. I mean, and the only thing I want to try to teach them, though, it's more like, don't wait. I mean, they're students. So what I think the only fault the students have, they're waiting for you to grab their hand and tell them everything.
Them
to become more like the way I learned. I mean, you have the fortune, you have you're lucky that you can be a student, okay? You're lucky you can afford it, or whatever situation you're in. Now, don't just rely on me. I mean, when you come back and say, but that didn't work, something happened on the camera. I'm like, did you look it up? Did you ask people? Did you go read about it? Did you open the manual? I want students to understand that I'm here to give you everything I know, but at the same time, try to figure things out yourself. Don't get stuck with problems. I'm not just here to solve your problems.
Absolutely.
You need to teach you new things, but you need to learn how to solve your own problems, because in 3 years, once you're out of school, nobody's going to go there and then hold your hand. And you're never going to learn everything in 3 years. You're not going to learn everything in a whole life. So yeah. You always have a problem. If you rely so much into from your professors or anybody else to tell you how to solve your problems, once you're alone, what are you going to do? So you're going to learn how to handle things, how to go and get it. And then you also have people around you who can help you out. But that was my main thing. I tried to teach them.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. Yeah. And that's how I learned. And I always, at university, I always wanted to figure things out on my own anyway. And You could see other people that were, I wouldn't say it's a generational thing, but you see a lot of people that expect things straight away. And you know, the lack of patience is a big thing now.
Yeah.
I'd say, you know, younger filmmakers, and you can't expect to have, you know, that. How do you learn without, if you're spoon fed, you really don't.
Exactly.
Like, you know, the way you learn to walk, you know, you've got people that might pick you up, but you really got to learn to walk.
And it doesn't work.
Exactly.
You're going to walk the time that your body knows, okay, so I'm ready to walk. They've done a bunch of experiments where they try, you know, that identical twins and one that will push and blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of like, that's a great example that you brought.
Yeah.
And another thing is, people rely too much on technology, on the equipment.
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely.
Way too much. So I try to really teach them. That's the basics and how to handle. Again, I learned it with a camera in the middle of nowhere. You know, that's how you're going to learn it. Don't think that your work is not good enough because you don't have that gimbal, because you don't have that crane, because you don't have that camera, you don't have that lens. No, guys, no.
Absolutely.
No matter what, it's all about the eye, the vision, and the capabilities that you have.
Yeah, and you know, story is paramount, obviously. And yeah, there's something I wanted to kind of, a little technical. What did you shoot on for your film? What camera?
I used pocket 6K.
I'm actually filming this on a pocket 4K.
I thought it looked so good.
I use an Elgato HDMI adapter, you can feed the 12K through. You know,
that's cool. But, no, I use the 6K, and as far as lenses, I just use the Samyang, not even the Xene, just the regular Cine. They're about
Not the VDS, not the cinema ones.
They're still Cine, just not the Xene.
Not the big ones. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, honestly, I actually tried the Xene, and these ones look better. I mean, these lenses, you start having trouble if you close them too much, but if you keep it under 5.6. As you can see, I mean, they're great.
Yeah, I think what you got out of the camera is great. And it is I wouldn't ever go back from a Blackmagic camera now. I always had Sonys, I had a Canon XL1S, that kind of thing, you know. I had much earlier tape-based cameras. Uh-huh. And as soon as I saw the it's called...
We call it the pasta, the feeling of it,
Yeah, a friend and I equated to like a thickness of the image. There's a real thickness to it. You know it's right. And I can't believe, I think it's the Pocket 4K and the 6K that Netflix don't have on their approved camera list.
Right.
Even though there's, you know, the Breaking Bad movie El Camino.
Yeah, they use their.
They use them on that.
Yeah. So what it is, I mean, I was looking into this Netflix thing. What it is, they're just saying if it's produced by them, they don't allow it. But if you actually have something already they want to purchase from you, they will still get it.
Right, I see. Okay.
So they will accept it. If you film something they want to purchase, it doesn't matter. But if they say we produce the film, we won't be able to use this. That's how basically what
that's really interesting. That's really interesting.
But again, I also use a Sony mirrorless. I love the little mirrorless. I mean, especially for low light.
Yeah.
When I do a lot of work, that it's something quick. I don't need to really have a whole set and crew when it's just me. Sometimes, because I mean, my Blackmagic, it's all rigged, so it becomes.
Oh yeah.
So I use my here it is. Hold on.
Yeah, great.
I use this little guy over here, and Now it's disappearing.
Is that a small rig? Was that 8 sin cage?
Yeah, this is a 7.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. Oh, look. Yeah.
And honestly, when you need something like that, it's you're in low light, you're alone and handheld and focused.
It's amazing. Right. It's low light king, and it has been for years. Yeah, like I used to have an A7S.
Yeah.
And the A7S II, a friend of mine bought one, and his battery, it would overheat quite a lot. But my A7S, even like 20,000 ISO, it's just
insane. I've done so much work at sometimes at 10,000, and it just
it's clean.
It's good grain. It's good. It's actually good. It's almost like film grain.
It's usable. It's usable. Yeah.
Yeah. So I honestly, Sony's and for low light, and then Blackmagic for anything that you have control of lighting.
Absolutely, I totally agree. What are you kind of watching at the moment? Is there anything you're into, shows or horror or movies generally?
I just finished to watch Lovecraft Country.
Oh yeah. I've not seen it, but I've heard a lot of good things about it.
I loved it. I just finished that one, and I just finished also The Outsider. HBO show. The Outsider is
Nicole Kidman.
No, it's a show with it's a Stephen King story.
It's not Jeffrey Wright, is it? Is it in a small town or something?
It's about people that. I don't want to spoil it.
Okay, I'll check that. I'll check that out.
It's actually really cool. It's a really cool story.
Yeah.
And what am I watching now?
Here's a question for you coming up to Christmas. Have you got any horror Christmas horror recommendations, things you like?
I mean, Black Christmas was one of my favorites when it came out. Christmas horror, that's something I never really.
I checked out Krampus, and I was kind of disappointed with it. A little bit.
They told me not to watch it.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a miss for me. If you just bear with me one moment, I've just got to check something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, right now, there's the one with the Fat Man. I need to watch Fat Man.
Yes.
It's not horror, but it's called Fat Man.
Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson. I gotta watch.
Oh my god, that looks fun. Walton Goggins, amazing.
Walton Goggins is one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, he's got such a good face.
Yes, and he's boring. Isn't
if so. You know his character from Sons of Anarchy.
Oh yeah,
it's one of the greatest body suit transformations of any individual I've ever seen. You know, uh-huh. And obviously the Shield. He's an absolute genius in that.
He was great in Django as well.
Oh my god, yeah. Oh, it's so dark.
They would say the Django, without the sound.
Yeah. And you could see, what's really clever about this? I want to be really clear and don't get this wrong. His performance in that, he's so racist as a character. In terms of the way he projects himself across as a racist, he's believable. He's truly believable doing that. Absolutely. And it's super sinister and It's such a fantastic film, and yep. I was honest. I'll be completely honest. I was a little bit disappointed with Hateful Eight, even though it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
And the score is Ennio is a genius, and sadly, we lost him this year. But the same thing with, apart from the final few scenes in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Uh-huh. I was a little bit like, what's going to happen here? I was switching off a little bit. But those last scenes, have you seen it?
Yeah, of course.
It's just, it's such a twist. I didn't expect it.
Yeah. Hateful Eight, I don't know. I mean, I get what he wanted to do. I get the whole story. I mean, it's genius, the whole thing.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
It wasn't as good as it could have been, but.
Yeah. Well, his next film is supposed to be his last, which is insane.
I still don't believe it.
I really don't believe it.
I can't believe it.
I want him to, it's going to be some giant movie, obviously, or whatever it's going to be. He's going to come out and say, did you really believe that?
I mean, it could be a good marketing strategy just to get.
Oh, yeah. It's a really long plan. Yeah. It's really great for that. Yeah.
I don't know. But I think he's going to just come out again and be like, hey, I'm here and I'm with Michael Jackson. And, you know,
Yeah. Something crazy like that. Yeah. have you got a trailer for Long Pig?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a teaser, but being just so short, I mean, it's four images just put together.
Because I wanted to see if you're interested. We want to put maybe a couple of shots or something at the beginning of this interview.
I'll send it to you. Or
that'd be amazing, because I don't want to kind of just wedge something in or some pictures or something. I just think it'd give people a nice flavor.
Absolutely.
Is that publicly viewable now, or is that later in the year?
Right now it is. I mean, right now I put it all publicly because I needed to. I mean, in the end, I was showing it to so many people that I'm like, at this point, I'll just make it public.
Yeah, we're happy to make that part of because we're going to embed a lot of the filmmakers' films, and we kind of will guide everyone to your social media and that as well.
That's awesome.
So, Ricardo, thank you so much, my friend.
No, thank you.
Please keep in touch. This has been really good fun.
All right.
And you're our first Italian filmmaker in the two festivals and on the podcast I've been doing.
Wow.
We've had submissions from Argentina, the US, okay. Russia, Australia, New Zealand. I'll email you details about our festival next year as well. So.
Okay, right on.
Yeah. Thank you very much for Long Pig. It was great. It was great fun to see it. So like, oh yeah, I've got a link for you. Okay, I'll stick it on the OLED TV. This looks fantastic, and it looks beautiful on a really good screen as well.
That's good. That's important.
Yeah, I love what you did with it. I think it's an excellent film, and I'll be. So this will be released in a few weeks' time.
Okay.
It's probably going to be. Early January when it's released, possibly before that. And what we'll do is we'll kind of build up to it with photos. Oh, and if you've got a headshot of yourself or a preferred photo.
I'm planning to get new ones for probably in a couple of days. I have a friend.
Well, if you want to send one of those over, that'll be great.
I will.
You can DM it, or you can send it to alex@hellbandhorrorfestival.com.
Okay, right on.
Well, thank you very much, Ricardo.
No, thank you. That was seriously a pleasure.
And I love the background. Thank you for doing that. It's so sinister. It's like you're sitting in a caravan park full of creepers, exactly. You know.
Next time I'll use my black magic.
this is better. This is honestly better. I love it. I'll see you soon, my friend.
Ciao. Thank you.